Hello and welcome to Season 7, Episode 15 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Wednesday the 9th of July and we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news, and there's a lot of news, and we're going to talk about what's been happening in the Ubuntu community. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat thing on the website and in the #UPC IRC channel. I'm Mark, and joining me this week are Tony.
Hello.
Laura.
Hello.
And Alan.
I've got the big chair to myself.
Yeah.
It's called a sofa.
Mark is lurking to my right.
Yeah. I just like to think of it as a wide chair.
Well, it is.
I don't see why that's so weird.
It was the sad way that you stroked the seat where Mark had been sitting that really got to me. Right.
Yeah, he's moved over there. I'll take a photo and post it on the Twitters later.
Okay, cool.
Good.
Excellent. Lovely.
Yes.
So, are we going to get on with some news?
Yes.
Yeah, why not?
Here's the news. Microsoft, enforcing a US federal court order, seized 22 domains from noip.com, the dynamic DNS provider. Why did they do this?
Oh, this must be why my noip.com service broke earlier in the week.
Oh, well.
Yes, yeah, so
well,
you're one of the millions of innocent customers who is affected by this, according to noip.
You should read the news more, especially the news that we put in here 2 weeks ago when this actually happened.
Oh, this explains a lot.
However,
what happened?
So they claimed that they got the domains because the domains were being used to distribute malware. So a lot of people use noip and other dynamic DNS names to point to IP addresses either on their home connections or other compromised machines.
Right.
So rather than directing people at IP addresses, they're directing them at real host names. I guess it gives them a bit more legitimacy, but it also means it's easier for them to get to that box.
Yeah, and so, I guess people who are on home connections that have dynamic IPs,
exactly.
They do change.
Right.
So they can keep track of their compromised hosts.
Handy tool for those people who want to send out lots of spam or control IRC, command and control, bots and stuff.
IRC bots, sure that all of the botnet people are after a bit of IRC.
Well, no, a lot of those bots that control the compromised
IRC.
Machines use IRC.
Sorry.
Yeah, so they summon them all in an IRC channel, like a private IRC channel, and all the bots check in, and they're all coming from random, all these connections coming in from compromised machines. Mm. And then they send a command via IRC to all those machines. So, it's, Microsoft basically didn't tell noip and just appropriated the domains.
Yes.
Which was a bit of a problem for the people who happen to have domains on noip.
How did they appropriate it? I mean, I can't just go and say, can you give us your
domain? Yeah, well, they didn't have to go and ask them for the domain, did they? Because domains aren't under the control of the company that it's like Nominet and
ICANN.
Yeah. You go to them and ask them for a court order.
Oh, right.
Give us those domains. Point the domains at these boxes and we'll look after those. Thanks very much. So, there was a bit of brouhaha.
So there was a court order?
Yes.
Right.
And NoIP, obviously criticised the move, saying they'd no contact from Microsoft before the enforcement, and they would have taken their own action if they'd been informed that that's what the problem was, that there was, which is reasonable to expect. However, they have now restored the domains back to NoIP.
Which is nice of them.
Yeah. Thanks very much.
Yes.
So, for a little while, was it about a week? Was less, slightly less than a week, they had control of those.
Mm. I noticed a kind of 48-hour outage.
Right, and the Microsoft servers that they pointed them all to couldn't cope with all these machines checking in to get change their DNS.
They should use some sort of cloud hosting service.
So, obviously, it raises the question, should we trust a private company with a commercial interest in this area to enforce such orders,
It seems very strange. They're not the police
of
the internet, are they, Microsoft?
They're just, a company, a tech company. Oh, go and take away a load of another tech company's, assets and screw them over.
Well, to be fair to Microsoft, they do a lot of security research. I mean, they have to because they have spent a long time releasing an operating system which is, very popular, installed at a very wide user base with people who don't update their security, their security patches, and it has a few holes in it here and there, as all software does.
Yeah.
So, I'm in two minds about this. I mean, I think it was a not a very good move, but somewhat necessary.
Well, no. But there are better ways of having done it. I think, yes, I agree.
They could.
Yeah.
Yeah. But everything's fine now because they've got their domains back.
Yeah. Hooray. Good. It started to work for me as well, so that's okay. Okay. I was just absorbing that story for my own self-interest there. Meanwhile, in other things, benches called solar-powered charging stations, called SUFARs, are being installed in some Boston parks. The stations allow members of the public to charge devices using USB ports, having drawn the power from the sun.
So they have batteries in them that charge up via solar power, do they?
Like, presumably.
Inside the bench.
Yeah, and they sort of store them and then trickle it out.
So these are in parks where people are, you know, going to get a bit of the outdoors, a bit of sunlight.
Yes.
Mm. And they're going to...
Yeah, you need charging them because your screen runs down a lot faster in bright sunlight. So
runs down when it's not connected to a power source, right?
Yeah, yeah. So you need something.
To find your way around, you've got your GPS on.
I don't know. Part of me just thinks, maybe I'm getting a bit old, but part of me thinks that outdoors, you know, it'll be the point where you're in a park which is like full of grass and there'll be a tree that's actually made of metal and inside it is... You know, a charging station and, you know...
It'll be one of those things off The Simpsons in memory of a real tree. It's just a hologram.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it was all trees around here, you know, when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Park benches, in your view, are for tramps and...
Well...
Park benches are just the first step on a slippery slope.
It's a slippery slope towards not having any green left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the machines will take over the
world.
It's not
like digging up the grass to put one of these in place.
No, but nice wooden benches. They're nice.
They are.
You can make one of these out of wood.
Wood doesn't charge very well, as I understand it. It's not very solar reactive. I mean, it's good when it's in the ground and growing.
I don't think it's the surface of the bench that does the charging. I think it's like a panel on top.
Well, maybe they should use potatoes.
Yes, because they're full of power.
They're full of power. You can run a clock from a potato.
Right.
Yeah.
So how do you charge your potatoes?
I mean, this thing's charging up over solar power. How do you actually charge your device then?
You plug in a USB cable.
Right. So you're going to walk down the street and plug a USB cable to your phone, which has got full of all your secret data.
Yeah, and then it will mirror your phone.
Random USB
onto port. A local tree.
Yeah. Yes.
There was actually a project I saw a while ago. Someone like they'd put some stuff on a USB stick and then cement it into a wall.
Oh yes,
and then you could just like plug.
Yeah, they call them drop boxes, don't they? No, they have got a name. They're like
These used to be called dead drops.
Dead
drops in the war. Yeah. So I wonder what type of wood they might make these benches out of. I wonder whether it might be from an apple tree for apple.
Laura, save us.
Yeah. So the KDE team were trying to make a low-cost open tablet.
Oh, the Vivaldi?
The Improv.
Oh, yeah, that was like a board that you could play with, which you could build a tablet around, wasn't it?
Yeah, and they've given up. Because they reckon that the hardware is just not at the point where it's non-proprietary.
So it's sort of not worth it.
So you get a partial, ideally full refund. If you supported the project.
Yeah, this was one of Aaron Saigo's projects.
Yeah.
And it was all based on some of the technology that goes into KDE, Plasma, and that kind of stuff. And they were doing deals with companies in the Far East to manufacture these boards.
Yeah.
And run, and there'd be fully free software.
Yes.
Right.
And that's the sticking point. And it's just.
Well, that was the selling point.
That was the selling point. Sadly, the sticking point, too. There is a free open laptop project.
Oh, yes.
Navina,
the one from Bungie.
But it's so much more expensive.
Right.
So they said that the Improv board was expected to sell for around $75. I'm getting this from lilyputing.com.
Uh-huh.
But it's like $500. Oh,
the one from Bungie is huge. It's a PC crowbarred into an ARM computer crowbarred into a laptop-y style case. We talked about that a few weeks ago, actually, didn't we?
Yeah.
But yeah, the Improv board is the other end of the scale. It's like the super cheapy end of the scale, and all fully free software. But yeah, it's a shame. It kind of all fell apart on the mailing list. There were horrible acrimonious discussions last month, and it was pretty obvious it was falling apart.
That's a shame.
Which is a real shame. Because, you know.
Can a community project really get enough momentum and coordination together to have hardware manufactured?
I'm not sure it was properly what you would call a community project. I mean, it was run by people, and Aaron put some of his own money into it, a quite a substantial amount, as it's been reported. He put in like $200,000 into the thing, which, you know, sounds like a lot of money from one individual, but, you know, in order to fund a large project, you know, you need millions, maybe 30 million.
30 million, yeah.
Yeah.
And even, what, 12 or 13 million is a lot.
That's not, and that's just not enough.
That's not enough.
Yeah. No, that's not enough.
It's never enough.
The Authority for Television On Demand, ATVOD, a subsidiary of the UK broadcast regulator Ofcom, has contacted the online newspaper UK Column, requiring them to submit to the body's regulation.
I've never heard of either of those.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So UK Column is like a video blog.
Well, it's not. It's an online news website which has a YouTube channel.
Okay.
Where they put,
are they not the same things?
Well, no. I mean,
okay. I think we're arguing over semantics. Yeah, but no, yeah,
they have video content.
It's a news site.
And they stream it.
Well, it can be streamed via YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And ATVOD is a privately held company under the direction of Ofcom. And they have asked UK Column to submit to their regulation. And their regulations are quite onerous and require them to pay money to ATVOD for that regulation or that membership. And that has a knock-on effect for anyone who's streaming anything that looks like a TV program. Because as far as ATVOD are concerned, their show looks like a TV program. But it's not on the TV.
Yeah. How do you define...
In the conventional sense of the box in the room.
Yeah.
It's streamed from YouTube.
It's not broadcast... In using satellite or Freeview technology.
If you're sat on satellite internet, then it is, yes.
Okay, right. Yeah.
It just happens to be using different protocols, then it's not UHF or, you know, DVB-T. It's H.264 over TCP/IP, but it's still broadcast from a couple of guys making looks like a news.
It's not really broadcast in that you won't just... If you tune into the right frequency, you don't happen to receive it. You actually have to go to YouTube and say, give me that video.
Right, in the same way that I have to go to my telly and choose the right channel. It's not that far removed in a high level, you know, what is a television?
So if we streamed our podcast live, would that count as broadcasting?
Don't know.
Well, the thing is, it's a bit vague because there's very little documentary evidence of what they constitute, what their guidelines are for what is a television program.
Mm. They seem to be very keen on pornography. Apparently,
what ATVOD?
Yeah, if you look at their news site, it's all about pornography. So really? They obviously think that the hardcore pornography is very television like.
Right. Okay. So yeah. So they want them to pay what is it? And
some money.
Yeah, so basically that you have to pay a fee. It depends there if you can actually find the list of fees. I mean, it's like I think the basic fee for a charity is several hundred pounds.
Right.
And if you don't pay, then you get fined £250,000 or 5% of your revenue, whichever is higher.
Nice.
Which is nice for, you know, if we decided that they wanted to regulate us because they needed some more money.
Right. But if you
fish around down the back of the sofa for a right. Well, no, whichever's higher, though. So if it's 5% of nothing, then it's £250,000.
That's the penalty, though.
Yes. If we said no.
I think nobody tuning into our video stream, which consisted of Alan's webcam taped to a curtain pole, would mistake it for a professional television program.
Well,
there wasn't.
You say that
a professional television program,
but there are people out there making podcasts that look like TV programs.
There are.
Yeah, there are plenty of podcasters who've created like fairly professional look and feel with titles and lower thirds and you know things that you get on the telly. And you know,
have you been on one of those podcasts, Alan?
Maybe. And never again. but, you know, forcing podcasters and people who are creating free, you know, community content to go through this is ridiculous.
And what if they suddenly said, oh, we're going to have an ATVOD, whatever audio on demand would be, and say, oh, the Ubuntu podcast sounds like a radio show.
Yeah.
You have to submit to radio regulations.
Right.
It's the thin end of the wedge.
Yes. That's what they're saying.
Mm.
Write your MP.
I did. Yeah. And what did they say?
I only sent it today. She hasn't got back to me yet.
Okay. Fair enough. Let us know. keep us in the loop.
In later news, ISPs are taking the GCHQ to court in the UK over mass surveillance.
Ooh. Why? Yeah. Why that?
Over alleged breach of privacy and breaking into their networks.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. Finally.
Only now?
Well, yeah. I guess now we've got some evidence from the Snowden releases and others that this stuff is going on. And I guess it takes time for them to mobilise their team of lawyers.
Yes, but it's not just like UK ISPs. It's a whole raft of people from all over the world.
Yeah, it's six countries: Germany, Netherlands, South Korea, UK, US, and Zimbabwe. Bizarrely, I'm not quite sure.
Because Zimbabweans hate everyone in the UK, presumably.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah, that would make sense, but I think it's only Mugabe. I wouldn't say everyone in Zimbabwe.
Sorry, no, that was a huge generalisation. One of my friends is from Zimbabwe. I probably shouldn't say things like that.
Yeah.
Mark.
That's why.
Yeah.
So that's one of those ones I think we'll have to just keep an eye on.
Yes.
And we'll roll and roll.
What, Mark? Oh, I see. Right. Yeah, interesting. The Inland Revenue Service, the IRS in the USA, which is Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs here in the UK, has denied 501c3 tax-exempt status to the Yorba Foundation, which supports development of free software projects like Geary and Shotwell. Mm. The 501 status has previously been granted to software foundations like Apache and GNOME. But as a result, individuals and companies will not be able to write off donations to Yorba against tax. This is quite common. It works in the UK as well. Mm. If you are registered as a charity, people give you money to do stuff. Those people can put it down as a charitable donation and basically don't have to pay any tax on it. They get some either money back or they don't have to pay the money in the first place to the tax man. But reasons for the denial included that the software cannot be shown to benefit a specific group, that it's not educational, and that the world is not a community.
Wow.
Dear. Because one of the things is it has to benefit a community, and they say, well, it's publicly available, so it benefits the world. And they say, no, the world's not a community.
Right.
Wow.
I love that. Somebody's had to define that, isn't it? Yeah. Does this mean trouble ahead for the software foundations?
Yeah. So, I mean, for Yorba, it could mean that they don't get as much funding as they otherwise might because people are less inclined to donate to them.
Mm. It's an interesting article. It's worth reading, written by Jim Nelson. Because it's funny because Yorba maintain a couple of, really decent software projects, Shotwell and Geary, and they're working on other stuff as well. And, this is clearly, this software is in the benefit of everyone. It staggers me that it can't be seen as, something beneficial and educational.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Yeah, they say that if you read the source code, you're doing it to fix something, and anything you learn in the process is purely incidental. It can't possibly be educational to be able to read a
of any benefit to read all of the Shotwell source code and, and use that for, your career.
Yeah, I've never learned anything from source code.
Well, you should try.
Oh, I do.
I learned something, but it was mostly not to try and read source code.
Is that the Ruby?
Yeah, and anything else.
Moving on.
So, Google and the whole censoring history thing.
We mentioned that a couple of weeks ago, didn't we?
I think
the
we
rights
did.
To be forgotten.
Yes. The rights to be forgotten, yes. And
I don't remember.
Oh.
Google it.
<can't>. so Google's been forced to censor the history of Merrill Lynch, apparently.
Yes, the ex-boss of Merrill Lynch, wasn't it? He was trying to get articles about himself removed from all over the place, and including Robert Peston's did an article. Peston on BBC did an article some years ago about the guy, and then when it got removed from the Google index, he wrote another article about it.
Yeah.
Linking
you don't want
to the
know
previous
journalists.
One. Yeah, it's just a brilliant way around it. Is here's another article about that article that I wrote that is no longer on Google. Suddenly breaks this whole right to be forgotten. So yeah, and then Google have reversed it, haven't they?
So have they now just said we're not going to listen to the EU's nonsense, or they said for this particular case, actually, he doesn't have the right.
Well, Google has a lot of say in what they do and don't remove, don't they? So they can't be not applying the law just by refusing one person.
Right, okay.
I'd have thought.
Mm. Well, they actually haven't restored the links to the BBC article. They've reversed their deletion of a Google a Guardian article, but not the BBC one that I mentioned. But
okay.
Mm.
CentOS 7 has just been released. It's the first release of CentOS to be released after the team joined Red Hat.
Mm.
Oh, cool. Well, yeah. Well done to them. Anything interesting in there particularly?
System D.
Ooh.
Yeah, because previous versions of RHEL and CentOS
used
Upstart.
Oh, did they?
Yes. Gosh, we've talked about this much in the past.
Red Hat just seems really old and crusty, so I assumed it just used...
Upstart is dead to you, clearly. yeah.
So, Upstart is dead, isn't it?
Well, maybe. Moving on. The Open Rights Group has launched blocked.org.uk, a site that allows you to find out if a site is blocked by an ISP government-mandated content filter.
Woo!
Yes. It's quite handy, actually. You just go to blocked.org.uk and fill in the name of a URL, and it gives you a little table telling you the popular UK ISPs and whether they think that the site that you've filled in is blocked or not.
They've improved it since it's launched as well. So some of them have like the default level of filters and the like child safe level of filters.
Rather than,
because basically what they've tried to do is make it so that with it's an example of what happens with as little sort of manual user thought as possible. Like you just accept the default or you just say yes or no. Yes, if there's only a yes or no option.
Right. So I don't have the filters switched on my Virgin Media connection. But to test this, I did turn on the filter on my Virgin Media connection and then found I couldn't actually reach blocked.org.uk, the site for looking up what is blocked.
Excellent.
So I filled in the form on the website that says, if you think this is incorrectly blocked, click here. So I did, and I said, please unblock it. And then I tweeted at Virgin Media and said, hey, can you please unblock this? And they did. So now it's unblocked.
BT said, also blocked it, and they've now unblocked it.
Yeah, they said it was erroneously categorised. So,
that's blocked.
Right, yeah, and that's never going to happen again about any website at all.
No, that's good. Yes. My TalkTalk blocked my blog from their kids' safe.
Oh, they got something right then.
Unfortunately, we don't have time for Tony's gaming news, which is a real shame.
I was looking forward to those ideas.
Yeah, so was I, and he's got so much to talk about.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate.
So let's move on. That's the end of the news.
Okay.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that pleases, puzzles, or piques you, tweet us at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. And remember, if we don't hear from you, we might not have enough content. And that can only mean one thing, more quizzes.
I really wish we could get Stephen Fry to give us more quizzes in his voice.
Brian Blessed
will be better. Yeah, he might end up swearing though. So, we have some community news. And the first piece of news is the community donations fund report for quarter one of 2014 has been published.
Ooh, anything familiar on there?
So this
any events been sponsored?
Yes, some events have been sponsored. So this is we've mentioned this before, and it's being done regularly. Michael Hall and Michelle in our office is working to get these out on a regular basis for transparency purposes, and it details how much money was donated to Ubuntu. You know, the thing when you download Ubuntu, there's a button that says, "Do you want to donate?" Yeah, it's money that's coming through that. And the carried forward balance from last quarter was $41,500.
Wow.
And this time we donated a total of $17,000. So there's still some money left in the kitty.
Cool.
Ending balance is higher than the starting balance looking at it. It's $43,200 left.
So if you're doing a thing which that benefits the Ubuntu community and you need some money, then you should definitely apply for some.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to just benefit the Ubuntu community. It's there are other things like, so there's sponsorship for going to events if you're going to give a talk about Ubuntu or something or show something off. But there's, if you look through the list, there's loads of things. There's travel for people going to Academy, the KDE conference.
Okay.
There's a little conference called OgCamp.
Ooh,
and a few others.
So is that sponsored by Ubuntu?
Yes, it is. We'll find out more about that in a minute.
Right.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's good and transparent and great.
Cool. Excellent.
Cool.
So, go on, Mark.
There has been an Alpha 1 release of the Ubuntu Mate remix.
Yes, there has.
Do you know anything about that, Alan?
I do, yeah. So this is the thing that me and Martin and Brett have been working on.
So we had Martin on the show a few weeks, possibly months ago, to talk about Mate.
Yes.
And since then, you've been busy.
We created a little remix, yes. And it's really nice.
Cool.
It's the Alpha's really good, really stable. There's only a couple of, like, semi-significant things, like the network manager doesn't start the applet thing, but right. you can just manually run it. It's a known bug, and there's a little UI thing, but most of it is pretty stable. The thing that Martin's working on at the moment is getting it so you can install it on EFI systems, which is a little bit tricky because of all the signed bootloader stuff
right.
Oh, right.
that is done for Ubuntu images inside the data center.
So okay.
as a remix, we don't have access to those keys and things. So
oh, you I could see. Just, SSH in.
No, I absolutely can't. I don't have access to anything like that. So that we're going to figure out a solution to.
Yeah, and the website's looking rather nice now. It's looking quite swish.
Yeah, we've had a few nice reviews. There's a few people who've done preview videos on YouTube, and there's a few, just initial looks at the alpha. It seems to have gone down pretty well.
I like the first line of the announcement, which says, "What works? Most things." And yes. then follows a list of things that don't work.
Yeah, it's not a huge list, is it?
No, it's not. No. It's a list.
Yeah,
it's not. There is a list there with things in it.
Yes.
And
well, that wouldn't be an alpha. It would be final release if it all worked.
And also in the community, unfortunately, this happens every so often, but somebody's been trolling in the Ubuntu community. Somebody by the name of Alan.
Well, specifically ending it with "Cheers, Al."
Yeah,
all my emails do.
Yeah,
gives away.
It's especially noticeable on the ones where people might get upset.
Yeah, the chirpiness of it all. So basically, somebody called Alan has been emailing the Ubuntu UK list, pointing out that the British translation for Ubuntu is lagging behind quite a lot of other countries. We're about 30th on the list, and it's a call to arms to make sure that all of the words that are spelt wrongly by Americans are spelt correctly.
Absolutely.
You know what this reminds me of? Has anyone seen that Steve Merchant Newcastle Brown advert?
Nope.
No.
I look it up. It's
okay.
Well worth it.
Right.
Is it something we could embed inside?
Not really. Right.
Okay.
No.
We won't do that.
Not
then.
Quite family friendly.
Yeah.
Right.
So the thing that it was David Planella who maintains this hit list of who's doing well in translation and who isn't, and he pinged me and said, "Do you know anyone who can help get these translations sorted?" And I didn't realize just how badly. And this is specifically for the phone.
Right.
This is the translations of the UI on the phone. Yes.
So it says color, labor.
Yeah,
aluminum.
So I trolled it a little bit by putting the subject line in American spellings. Just to catch people so that they would go, "Oh, look, he spelled that wrong." And then those are exactly the kind of people I want.
Okay, so we've got some event news coming up. Laura, what's that about?
We do. There's a little event going on that's called OgCamp.
Yay!
And it's going to be in October in Oxford. And apparently it's sponsored by the Ubuntu community.
Yay.
And the OgCamp community.
Yes.
And, is that at silver still?
That's silver at the moment. Let's get it up to gold. I think we're probably halfway to gold.
Wow. Cool.
I contributed.
And that's why people... it's a free event. You don't have to pay for a ticket, but if you want to, you could give us some money at the point when you get your ticket. And if you do, that helps us to run the event.
Yeah.
And that counts as the Ubuntu, as the OgCamp community then.
Yes. Yeah.
What that is.
Yes.
So that's the 4th and 5th of October, the Oxford Hotel, Oxford.
Yes.
So where can people find out more?
It's ogcamp.org. And if you haven't booked a hotel yet, we do have some discounted rooms at the venue. We didn't have a very big allocation, so... It's basically when they're gone. So if you want one, get in quick. Details again are on the accommodation page on the website.
Excellent. Yep.
And if you're wondering what OgCamp's about, it's not just about media formats.
Audio codecs.
It is hardly at all about them, unless somebody can do something really witty with Og.
We've tried to reinvent what Og is every year.
Yeah.
But it's definitely not audio.
The sign of a successful event is having to explain what it is every year.
Yeah, well, it's a good name. It's just, So, it's all sorts of things, but it's software, open source, but it's also things like what we call free culture and
creative commons stuff. Hardware hacking. And, some people do like,
Screen printing.
Screen printing, sort of political activism stuff, all sorts of
anything,
stuff.
Home automation.
Home automation,
Quadcopters, building, that kind of stuff. Yeah. It's all good fun.
Minecraft.
Check it out. OgCamp.org. There we go, Mark.
That's all for episode 15. We'll be back next week when we'll be interviewing David Herman about his Miracle Cast project.
Ooh, what's Miracle Cast?
We'll find out
next week.
Save it for the show.
Well,
I don't think it works when you say it on air, because we never say that on air.
No, we don't do it.
It's such a running joke that we've just introduced everybody to.
Seven seasons.
Well, we did talk about Miracle Cast in last week's episode a little bit.
Yes, we did.
Talking about various video technologies. So, listen in. Anyway, see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.